You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
I'm glad to be here, Jim. A lot going on this week. Thanks for having me.
Do we have a special offer for our listeners?
You have for new subscribers to HowStreet Radio, we offer 50% discount, and the promo code is 2022 half off. You go to VRTrader.com, which is a shortcut to Leibovit VR Newsletters, and the promo code, enter 2022 half off. And it's only for new subscribers. And we also make that disclaimer that I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice. That we've been publishing since 1979, all kinds of market and political commentary. So we're here.
Now, a giant monkey wrench has been thrown into the works with 25% tariffs being slapped on Canada and Mexico by the U.S. Canada and the U.S., either the biggest trading partnership in the world or second biggest, depending on that what particular day you take the figures. This is going to really disrupt trade on both sides of the border because so many factories and facilities rely on just-in-time deliveries of goods between Canada and the U.S., the auto industry especially. I hear a car makes 7 trips across the border before it's done. What kind of impact do you think this is going to have on the relationship between Canada and the U.S. when it comes to trade?
You know, I'm not smart enough to answer that question. I mean, it's happened before. You know, I see more reasons for imposing that tariff on Mexico, which we talked about a little off air because of, I think, their totally irresponsible conduct here in allowing millions of people to pass through their country and come into the U.S. and not doing anything about it. And probably 25% is too small of a penalty. And then, frankly, in my opinion, there should have been military action on our part to stop them long before now, but we didn't have an administration that was conducive to that. As far as Canada's concerned, I don't know what the motivation for Canada is. Clearly, Trump doesn't like Trudeau, but he's headed out the door anyway, apparently. So I don't know what the main focus was. I know on the illegal immigration side, Mexico has more responsibility there, and I think that made a lot of sense. And like I said, I don't even think it was enough of a penalty or enough of a deterrent, but. You got me on the Canadian connection, and I agree with you. There's too many close connections, supplies, raw materials, all kinds of stuff that are very important to both countries. So I'm just curious myself with the specific reason for the Canadian punishment versus the Mexican. But we have to talk to Donald Trump about that one.
Right now, of course, Trump has asked NATO members to increase their defense spending to 5%. Whereas the previous goal had been 2, Canada's still very short of that. Of course, the U.S. is probably expecting its NATO partners to make their military purchase from American contractors. What if they decide that, yeah, we'll improve the military, but we're going to either make the stuff ourselves or buy it from Europe?
I suppose so. I know he wants more production here in the U.S. He wants companies to make stuff here and not do it offshore. So, maybe that's part of the Canadian deal. You know, maybe he wants more stuff done here and not stuff done in Canada for the same reasons that he's trying to get a lot of the stuff produced in Mexico produced here in the U.S. instead. You know, a lot of that has to do with China and their influence in Mexico and so forth. Of course, China's got a big influence in Canada as well. So maybe there's a Chinese connection to this action. I don't know. It's like I say, this is not my area of expertise. If any, it's watching the markets and just trying to figure out where opportunity lies. So at the moment, when the news came out, the stock market sold off a little bit and bounced right back. So we'll see what happens the next couple of days. I don't know how the markets are going to interpret it all. I know there's a lot of negative comments about tariffs to begin with, and a lot of the, most of the research I have done and read, it really isn't all that negative. You know, tariffs have been around for a long time. Of course, you could argue there was a tariff history goes way back with Alexander Hamilton. There's some comments he made there, and even Abraham Lincoln made a comment here in the 1860s about high protective tariffs that were the positive for the country. Of course, at that time, we didn't have income tax, so the tariffs were a substitute for that before the income tax came along. Of course, Trump's talking about getting rid of the income tax, too, and should be real interesting times, you know, but will Congress go along with it? And a lot of talk, and we'll see what type of action results. But I think the bottom line is, you know, Trump's involvement is a super positive for this country, I believe, because we have so much incompetence up to this point in time. And I'm an optimist in terms of the results. Now, it doesn't mean you can't see volatility in the markets and all kinds of crazy things going on, you know, geopolitically and so forth that we can't control. And, of course, you got the Federal Reserve issue. They're doing their own thing, and Trump disagrees with the fact that the Fed didn't lower rates in the meeting you saw on yesterday, Wednesday. So a lot of other factors out there we can talk about, but you know, right now the tariff issue is historically has been with us for a long time, you know, going way back to Abraham Lincoln's day forward, and it's not nothing new. It's been part of the American experience for, you know, 150 more years. So you know, it plays its role, and I think, you know, getting more production, manufacturing here in the U.S. and creating jobs is really an important thing to say, so and to accomplish. So I'm for it in terms of this concept, and you know, whether the tariff is going to be as effective as Donald Trump is hoping, only time will tell.
Yeah, until well, Canada is the biggest source of imported energy for the U.S., both crude oil and refined oil products like gas and diesel and so on. And then, of course, we have wood. And I saw one where Canada is also the biggest single supplier of French fries to the U.S. Can America survive if Canada cut off its French fry supply?
They probably won't. It's going to hurt Burger King and McDonald's and, you know, a lot of all the other fast food restaurants. If it comes from Canada, I wasn't aware of that detail, but that's interesting. So,
and, of course, Canadians love visiting places like California, Florida, and Hawaii in the winter. And I've heard that travel agents are getting their Hawaii trips from BC canceled. A lot of it, though, has to do with the low Canadian dollar. So already a U.S. dollar is worth about $1.40 Canadian. With tariffs, the value of the Canadian dollar will fall, making our products even more attractive, even with a 25% tariff.
Right. I can understand, you know, Canadians, the cost of travel, the cost of buying anything goes up with the dollar up relative to the Canadian dollar. Just the opposite here, you know, if we wanted to purchase something or do something in Canada, we get that discount with the exchange rate. So it does work against Canadians, but it has for a while with the U.S. dollar strong and the Canadian dollar down. I think it's temporary with that scenario. I don't know if that's a short-term or long-term comment. You know, Canada's so resource-based, and there's so many important things that come out of Canada, like you mentioned, you know, all kinds of materials and so forth. So, you know, over time, I think I always thought the Canadian dollar was a great investment because of the natural resource component. So I think over time, you know, buying the Canadian dollar is probably not a bad idea. I don't know if today is the timing moment for it, but longer term, there's certainly value in Canadian resources in the country. So the other big question is will Donald Trump be successful negotiating a deal to acquire or generate closer ties with Greenland, which is, of course, adjacent to you guys as well on the eastern side of the country. And that's really and also the story about renaming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. I mean, just a lot of interesting stuff going on. Donald Trump is definitely creating a legacy for himself. We'll see how it all plays out.
How is crude reacting to this?
Well, you know, crude oil had a sell-off here. It created on the charts what you would call a double or triple top formation, so it couldn't break through that mid-80s level. Then it sold back down again into the 70s. And honestly, over time, you know, I've been a big bull on crude on a bigger picture basis. And, you know, with some geopolitical events suddenly coming out of the blue, you could see a spike at any time. But the more I think about it, and I actually put out a couple trades here the last few days on the short side on crude oil, my thinking is if Trump is successful with the drill baby drill thinking, it's going to put pressure on crude oil prices. And I sort of referred to this in a previous interview. So whether it's a 6-month comment or a 2-year comment, it's hard to pinpoint it, but I'm becoming a little bit more bearish on crude oil prices because I think that over that supply is going to bring crude oil way down, and you're going to, you know, potentially see you know, substantially lower prices. And again, I don't have a specific time frame. We've already seen a little correction here the past week or so, and we profited from that on a trading basis. But you know, some geopolitical things suddenly, you know, turned up, and crude oil could spike for a while, and I can't foresee that happening or not happening. It's a possibility out there, of course, but I think just the big production, you know, you could see crude oil drop, I don't know, $55 a barrel or something crazy number, or even lower, you know, in the next, again, I don't have a specific time frame, but I'm guessing during the course of the Trump administration, if the pumps are really pumping and that oil is coming out and gushing out all over the place, it's got to be a depressant of some sort if it's been restricted up to this point. Now, I'm not a crude oil expert in terms of the production aspects and the transmission and shipping of it and so forth. So there are other variables there that you have to investigate. But the chart said we peaked out for a while, so let's see if that chart pattern changes.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, the big story until the tariffs were announced was NVIDIA's big crash when China released its more affordable AI version. No one's saying that it's better, just more affordable. How long do you think this AI war is going to last? As someone said, NVIDIA, I think it was our friend of the show, Sean Broderick, who had the quote, NVIDIA struck by a deep-seeking missile.
Well, you know, I'm trying to get caught up as everyone else is. So the deep six,
deep you know, seek.
Yeah. Is the culprit to the big sell-off, and it's basically Chinese DeepSeek itself is a Chinese intelligence company that developed open source large language models, and apparently the story came out and this nailed NVIDIA for a couple days, and it really took a chunk out of the chart, which was in a bullish pattern, and suddenly it reversed to the downside because of this DeepSeek story. But I'm not, you know, technical enough on the chips and the connection to DeepSeek and how that could hurt NVIDIA, though the impression was that it could. There's a lot of stuff that we're putting in our newsletter, just descriptive stuff about, you know, it's really an evolution in artificial neural processing, and the claim is that this could put a dent into, you know, NVIDIA's business and creating something more powerful. So the chart, it turned negative. You know, Taiwan Semiconductor, which produces many of the chips themselves, regardless, I suppose, where they're coming from, responded negatively. It bounced back a little bit better than NVIDIA did. But if you look objectively at the chart, it looks like we may have put in a big top there for a while. So, you know, I know it was news-driven with the deep six, and we're also in this cyclical time frame that I had warned about. You know, coming into February, and of course you've got the Groundhog Day coming up Sunday, and I warned that you can get volatility, usually a nice sharp sell-off during this time frame, and I've cited previous occasions where this has happened. So when we saw that sharp mini crash a couple of days ago, it didn't surprise me because we're in that time frame for it. But the chart pattern in the NVIDIA is negative short term, so it's going to have to overcome a lot. I'm not rushing out and buying NVIDIA except if you're trading it, you know, that type of thing. But it could be a change of sentiment here, a change of direction in the stock. So I'd be looking elsewhere. I don't think I'd be looking at NVIDIA right now. I think this, the chart, at least for the short term, has got some problems. But we got a lot of stuff going on out here. It's been a wild week, and the volatility is something that I was sort of looking forward to. We've got, you know, some geocosmic stuff going on. There's actually a hole in the sun's atmosphere, and it was reported on spaceweather.com. It's facing directly toward the Earth, and it's blowing a stream of solar wind in our direction. It's due February 1st, so that's coming up here in the next 24 hours or so. And you know, I was reading an article about how bad a solar storm could be. So, if you just ask or look at human records, you know, how far can we go back? You know, maybe a few hundred years, but there was a study done. If you look at trees and check the rings of the trees and so forth, there was a study just done recently out of a university that basically went back and checked the rings of some trees going back into some Japanese cedar trees that dated back into the 700 AD time frame. And they saw a 12% jump in carbon-14. So that's an isotope created by cosmic radiation. So they say the surge was 20 times greater than ordinary fluctuations in cosmic rays. So this was something really strong. It was much stronger than you and I have talked about the Carrington event of 1859, which was one of the worst-case scenario for solar storms. But according to the measurement of those tree rings, in the 774 AD or so, the storm would have been 10 times greater than the Carrington event. And, you know, if that happens here, it would floor modern technology. It would pretty much wipe us out in terms of the impact of the sun here on the planet. So, you know, we say there's a hole in the sun's atmosphere, which, and then they're supposed to see some effect tomorrow. It doesn't mean we're going to get this AD 775 or the Carrington thing, but something that hit the news here, and it's funny, it's coming in this time frame where I'm somewhat cautious anyway about the markets coming into February, and our cycle work, as I've mentioned a few times here, you know, this entire first quarter of 2025 is sort of a treacherous time frame where you could see a lot of volatility, if not a big sell-off at some point. Maybe it's already started, we'll see. You have the vernal equinox, you know, March 20, 21st time frame, and there have been important lows sometimes in the market around that time frame. The most classic, I guess, in recent years was the COVID crash, which ended really right at the vernal equinox. So I'm watching a lot of stuff out there. I know people think that this is sort of irrelevant, but it's very relevant because we're trying to focus on timing in the markets as well as individual, you know, stock selection and stuff. So it was, you know, an interesting week, and we actually saw gold take off big here, Jim. You know, we were talking about gold, and I can't say for sure. It looked like it was a new high today. It depends on which chart you're looking at, but it was pretty darn close to at or near the previous high. And if you remember, you know, cycles were saying, you know, we should see strength into February just on a seasonal basis in gold. Now, whether it ends now in the next few days or a couple weeks, then we go into a correction into the summer, you know, we'll just have to watch the charts. But the rally, it really doesn't come as any great surprise because we were due for a bounce, you know, in this general time frame. So the pull-off in crude oil, the rally in gold, a lot of, you know, the big sell-off in the NVIDIA and the semiconductor group, you know, a lot of interesting volatility here the last few days, just a lot of stuff going on, a lot of jello moving on the plate, so to speak. But it just, you know, let's see what the groundhog says on Sunday. As you know, if he sees a shadow, supposedly that scares him and he runs back into his hole. And that means that we're going to get six more weeks of winter, according to the folklore around the Punxsutawney Phil event this coming Sunday. I don't really, you know, subscribe to the shadow and so forth more than apparently this time frame, which I referred to several times into early February, tends to accompany some market volatility. So Groundhog just fits perfectly in that time frame, and whether we see six more weeks of winter or no, we don't see it is sort of irrelevant to the fact the cycle, you know, does exist in this in the time frame. So you know, we're playing the short side a little bit here in the indexes the last couple of days, on and off, and I don't think we're out of the woods until March, but you know, everything changes day to day, and you got to, you know, trade the stocks. You got all these earnings reports coming out, like Tesla came out yesterday, and Microsoft came out, and Meta came out, and you see just a lot of volatility up and down with these big name stocks. So you know, it depends what your timing is. I would have to say that again, I'm very pro Trump in terms of the economic and political change in this for the United States, and I think overall it's positive. But you know, even when Ronald Reagan was president, we experienced the big stock market crash, you know, back in 1987. So even though a lot of political and social moves are, I think, are for the positive, there's so many other variables out there. You've got the Federal Reserve situation, still holding rates high and not really coming down. And I was very encouraged to see there was a bill, Rand Paul. This is the son of the original Dr. Paul, the first U.S. Congressman. This is his son, and he introduced a bill to audit the Fed. And, that's the first step, I guess. I mean, really, I think it needs to be abolished, and I've been writing about this for the longest time, and I'm not the only one who feels that way, but we talked about on these broadcasts about a lot of the shenanigans that goes behind the scenes at the Federal Reserve, and he's requesting an audit of actually what they're doing, and I've told you the Freedom of Information Act in the past has shown them in doing some really crazy stuff, like investing in Harley Davidson a few years ago and private companies, and I don't know what the heck they're doing back there secretly. So the Fed really needs to be held accountable. I think, ultimately we should abolish it altogether. In the classic book, Creature from Jekyll Island, that I referred to on these broadcasts, and you see it on my post on my website all the time, a couple decades ago, really talks about the ineptness of the institution and the mistakes they made. And I think it's more than just getting rid of Jay Powell. I'm sure Trump's putting pressure on him to resign and so forth, but it's just the nincompoops that run the Fed. They've caused more damage than benefits. A classic example, of course, is when they raised interest rates during the Great Depression in the 1930s, and not to mention all the other crazy cycles that they were behind the eight ball on. So I'm very encouraged to see that legislation introduced, whether it's going to go anywhere or not. But that was a big story this past week and got me pretty excited. But, there's some attention being paid to it, not as much as I think it should be. But we know we need to have a real enema on, the U.S. Treasury, the way we spend our money, the way the Fed conducts its interest rate policy, its monetary policy. And we should really be looking at the free market. The bond market really is the real market. It's not controlled by the Fed. That only controls the short-term rates. And, of course, they do play with the money supply, which is dangerous. But, we really need to hold them accountable. So, anyway, that was another interesting story this past week that I wanted to touch base here. And as you may probably know, and the listeners probably already know, that Chinese New Year is here. And it's the year of the snake. And Friedrich Nietzsche came out with a quote about the snake, which cannot cast its skin has to die, as well as the minds which prevented us from changing their opinions, they cease to be mine. So, stark as that may read, adaptability is the key to success. And I think, the snake shedding its skin could be a strong parallel to what we just saw here, at least in the U.S., and we're starting to see it in world politics, too, about, you know, being adaptable and changing to the times. So a lot of stuff, you know, between the groundhog and the snake and the solar activity and tariffs being put on and the reserve being challenged. I mean, we have a news, we have a news calendar here, which is incredible. Of course, all the confirmations going on in the U.S. Senate for cabinet appointees has been happening the last few days. So, look for a lot of action in the markets. As always, we're going to see a lot of trading opportunities here with a lot of volatility in all the markets. And there's, you know, there's always a bull market somewhere, as the expression goes. So I'm looking forward to the volatility ahead, Jim.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.